medical material was performed under extreme mental duress and lack of prescribed medication.
You know, there's a lot more to comedy than what you hear on the stage.
I like the idea of comedy at night. Rule number one, attack the audience verbally.
You know, my friends laughed when I started doing comedy, and nobody's laughing now.
I emptied my case. They didn't boo me or anything. It's just every time I came out from behind the case, another 10 people had left. Man, I was ready to hang myself. I'm not kidding, man. I measured the light cord in the room and everything.
It's The Green Room, a program by comics with comics where we talk about everything. And it's starting right now. Hey, everybody. You have made it once again. It's The Green Room. I am your host, Vil Moshe. I appreciate you listening. And if you're listening to us with someone else, we're at www.greenroomradio.net and also on iTunes. Thank you so much, all of you iTunes listeners. This week, we got somebody who's coming in, going to be working at Laughs Comedy Club in Tucson, February 12th and 13th. Welcome to The Green Room, Mr. Rob Sherwood. Hello, Rob.
Hi, Vil Moshe. How are you, my friend?
I am very good. It's nice of you to take your time to do this with us. First time I've ever talked to you, so these are always kind of fun for me because I get to find out a lot of interesting things. Like one thing I noticed about you, you're a big Vegas guy. I've never really had anybody that seemed to be ingrained into the Vegas community as much as you.
Yeah, I am. I live here and started doing comedy here, which was really weird because this really wasn't a great place to start any kind of a career.
Right.
Because everyone, you know, it's always for the established acts Vegas has always been known for. But there was a few open mic rooms and started doing it there. And then just kind of, you know, got my way in and met a lot of people. And, yeah, I work here quite a bit. It's kind of a fun town to be in.
Is there, and you said it's not big for, you know, guys that don't have a lot of credits. Do you work at a lot of different clubs there? Or when you're in Vegas, you got to pick one?
I work at, I work at the Riv. I work at, there's a new club that just opened up called Sin City Comedy.
Yeah.
I work at the Bonkers Club. I'm sure they loved me all talking about them. and I have kind of a steady gig opening for Carrot Top.
Yeah, I saw that, and I wanted to talk about that. I had a chance to open for Carrot Top years ago and didn't get to do it because some other things got in my way. But is that a good gig? Do you like it?
Yeah, it's a great gig. It's easy. It's, you know, it's 10 minutes, so I can leave my house by 7:45. I'm on stage by 8:30. I'm back in the car by 8:45, and I'm home by 9:00.
Really?
Yeah. Unless I want to hang out, you know, there until the show's over, and then sometimes we'll go get something to eat afterwards or something. But for the most part, I can just go there, do the show, and then go home.
And how did you manage to get that gig?
Well, he was looking for someone local. He has a guy that's been with him for years named Charlie Varicola. And Charlie was his main guy when Scott was on the road opening for him. And when Scott's Carrot Top, by the way.
Right.
For people who are getting confused, his real name is Scott. So when he moved here and got the contract at the Luxor to have a steady gig here, Charlie didn't want to live in Vegas. He didn't want to leave L.A. to come to Vegas. So Charlie said he would come here once a month to do it, but for the other dates, they were going to have to find some local people. So they had hired a bunch of people. There's one gentleman named John Payton who was doing it, and then there was a bunch of other people. And they were looking for one more opening act, like someone local. And so both John and Charlie recommended me. I went in, I did a spot one night, and Scott liked it. And so I got hired, and then it was just three of us. And now there's like five of us that he uses, and we rotate through.
Okay.
The year. So so it's fun, you know, and it's nice. You get the dates for the year at just about the beginning of the year, so you know when you're working, and then you can fill around those. So it's nice to have kind of something on your calendar for the whole year.
And that's the Luxor, right?
He's at the Luxor. Yeah, it's an 8:30 show. And if you haven't seen him and you don't think you're going to like him, you're going to be big. There'll be a big surprise for you because he really is very entertaining.
Well, and how big a theater are you working in?
It's a 400-seat theater, and it's almost like those movie theaters you go to now where the seats are very steep, it's very raked.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of a theater. In fact, the theater, I think, used to be a motion ride when the Luxor first opened up, and then they turned it into a performing theater, and now there's Menopause is the first show, and then Carrot Top, and then afterwards is Fantasy, which is a naked girl show, which sometimes we hang around to watch.
Oh, of course. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Why not?
Yeah.
It's now, there.
It's not because you want to.
Right.
Right. Now, doing that, is it a TV clean show? I mean, are there requirements that you have to do?
He would rather us not be too blue. You know, we're just warming it up for him. And he doesn't work blue, really. I mean, he's got a few jokes, and he'll say the F word once in a while. And he's got some, you know, dildos on hats that he makes fun of jokes with and stuff. But for the most part, yeah, it's kind of a PG-13 set that you do. And once again, you know, it's 10 minutes. And, you know, you don't want to, you know, turn the crowd off in the first 10 minutes of the show. And they don't even know you're coming out, which is the weird part for us because, you know, it's like Carrot Top, Carrot Top. We're not mentioned anywhere as far as, you know, advertising goes. So the show starts, and it's all the music, and the lights are flashing. You know, welcome to Carrot Top. Yeah, and everyone's like, yeah, all right, Carrot Top. And then somewhere in there they go, and now you're opening act for this evening. And then, you just kind of walk out, and everyone's like, oh, okay, we're not ready then. This is going to be – so they kind of have this, we're not sure we're going to like this yet, you know, because who's this guy? He's not Carrot Top. So you got 10 minutes to kind of get them to like you, and then you're done.
But isn't 10 minutes, doesn't it feel like a pretty short time?
It's a very short time. That's why you have like 2 minutes for them to get to know you and like you. It's kind of like a TV set. You know, it's kind of like a set you would have to do TV where they give you 6 or 8 minutes on a spot and you've got to get it all in that 6 or 8 minutes. So essentially the first 2 minutes of your set is them getting to know you, you know, and making sure that they're going to like you. And then the last 8 minutes, you can kind of go into material and kind of enjoy yourself. And it works. You know, you just kind of – it's a different mindset than if you're headlining a club like this weekend in Tucson where, you know, I'll have 40 minutes to do what I want and can take them on a little journey. And I don't have to feel like I got to, establish myself really fast. It's more of a show, and this is more of a job as far as just getting it done. Doing the 10, getting them warmed up for him, and then getting off.
Right. But do you feel like getting into the habit of doing 10 minutes over longer periods of time, like I saw in your schedule, you're doing like pretty much when you're not out, you're doing at least 2 weeks a month, it seems like, January, February, whatever.
Yeah, usually it's about once a month. Sometimes it's once every other month, depending on how the schedule, because he takes off. Like every 5 or 6 weeks, he takes a week off.
Right, and so, probably goes out and does some stadium stuff.
When he's off, he's off.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
No, he doesn't go out. He hasn't been out on the road for this summer will be 2 years when he goes out on the road, because my son works for him.
Oh.
My son does his on-stage video stuff.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and so... Yeah, so they're talking about maybe this summer going up. But no, when he takes off, he has another home in Florida. So he'll either go back to Florida where he's originally from for a week, or he'll go on vacation, or he'll just hang out here. Yeah, when he's off. Because he really, it's a pretty grueling schedule. He's doing 6 nights a week, and he does about an hour and 20.
Holy crap.
Yeah, and he's pretty physical. So, yeah, after about 5 weeks of that, he's ready for a week off.
I bet.
Because people listening to this are going, oh, he works an hour and 20 a night? Oh, you're killing me. I work 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week. But, you know, for a performer, it's a lot of performing.
No, it is. But to go back to what I was saying, do you feel like doing just 10 minutes a night and getting comfortable with that, it helps you or hinders you when you're doing longer shows?
It really hasn't affected me because I just kind of get into that mindset that I know I'm just doing the 10 this week, and next week it'll be 40. And now I've been doing it now. I think I'm starting my fourth year of doing it. And if I did it all the time, If there was longer periods when I was, like, if I was doing this like 4 or 5 weeks in a row with him and then had to go out and headline, it might be weird. But the fact that I only do it for 6 days in a row and then I'm back out doing something else, it doesn't really, it's not that bad, really. I find it weirder doing, if I have to do like 20 minutes somewhere and then have to do 45 minutes. That sounds weird, but that seems to be more of a time thing because 20 minutes is kind of a long set.
Yeah.
And so then if I got to do another 25 on top of that, but the 10, it's really so quick that it's just, it flies by when you're up there because we have a little digital clock that's at the foot of the stage so we can keep track of our time. And so, I do notice it when I go from, if I'm headlining somewhere and then I come back to that week. So if I've been doing 45 and now I got to do my 10, I go up there and I start talking and I'm like, hey, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden you look down at the clock and you've got 2 minutes left and you go, wow.
Right.
You know, then it flies by. But it's just, you know, you kind of adjust and it's, I kind of look at it like it's a TV set. And I just, and that's the way I do it. It's just a TV set. And not that I've done a lot of TV, but I just do it and then, you know, it doesn't change too much, believe it or not.
Right. And what about inhibiting or helping you when it comes to booking? Because I'm not great friends, but I'm kind of friends with Dennis Blair, who was George Carlin's opening act
right.
for 20 years.
Right. And actually, it's opened a lot of doors for me.
Yeah?
It kind of gave me some kind of credibility with people thinking, wow, if you're opening for a major Las Vegas act, you must be pretty good. And now, before I had opened for Ray Romano here, and now I'm starting to, I got a few dates coming up with Brad Garrett, so I'm going on the road with him. So, it has given me like a bit of a, you know, he can open for major acts kind of credit, and that's a nice credit to have.
But it doesn't help you necessarily in the clubs or no?
I don't really know. You know, the weird thing about clubs is clubs, I don't think, unless you're really putting asses in their seats, they don't really care, it doesn't seem like, about your credits all that much. Now, if you have a huge TV credit and then all of a sudden their numbers go up on the weekend, I think they care more about that than if you're just an opening act for somebody. I haven't really found that getting into a new club, it seems like the only thing that people care about when you get into a new club is that you're good in their club.
Right.
So, like, I've had places where they'll go, well, would you mind coming and featuring for a week? Let's see how you do. And I'll usually agree to that. I'll say, well, I'll do it once. And then I'll come in, I'll do the week, and then afterwards they'll bring me back to close the show.
Uh-huh.
And it usually seems to be that's what they're looking for. Although maybe people are, you know, like the fact that I come from Vegas, that I'm, you know, I'm a Vegas act and it's something different for their area. But it doesn't seem to really be a credit that's really making a huge difference in getting bookings or not.
Okay. And how long did it take you to kind of get to know Carrot Top?
First night I did the guest spot, we went out to dinner afterwards.
Oh, well, that's good.
And we both kind of just hit it off as far as, you know, talking and chatting. And he's a pretty personable guy.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we just kind of hit it off like that, and yeah, right from there it was cool.
Well, the reason I ask is because I knew, God dang it, I can't remember his last name, Tommy. He's out of Texas. He opened for Cher for 90 shows for her.
Oh, I know the guy you're talking about. Yeah, because he came in and did a guest spot one time, when I was working in Houston,
he met her once. And
yeah,
she said hello to him. She said hello to him. They're having a pottery night at some ceramics place. And it was the big thrill for him for the whole – not for him personally, but, I mean, his big meeting with her was her looking over and going, gee, that's a nice shade of green you're coloring that ashtray.
Right.
So
– yeah, no, we see – I mean, I say hi to him before the show. We're in his dressing room. It's a pretty casual thing because there's only – there's him, and then he has, like, a tour manager kind of a guy, and then two other guys that are involved in actually running the show. He has a sound effects guy who's in the booth, and then he has a guy backstage who does his on-stage videos. And those are the guys that are, like, in his immediate crew. And then there's the hotel crew guys, the spotlight operators, and the sound guy, and the light board guy that do the show. So there's only like four people that are involved in the immediate circle of his people. It's not like a share production where there's, you know, probably 100 people involved.
Right. Well, and the other thing, the guy, when I didn't do the show with Carrot Top, he was out touring, and this was 10 years ago. The guy that did do the gig, I talked to him when he came back, and he said that they were very specific about where he could be on stage, and they had marks for him so they didn't walk over something that wasn't. Do you have that kind of issue doing it now?
I don't really have. They've never said that to me. It's not a very big stage, so you really don't have a whole lot to move.
Right.
But I guess if I wanted to, you know, pace around a lot, they never said anything about that. The only thing that will occasionally come up as far as that is if once in a while, if there's something topical in the news, because he stays very current. He changes up his act a lot. So if there's something very current going on, he'll probably ask you not to do your joke about it.
Right.
So what will happen for me is I'll go out on the road and you know, write a joke, come back, and think, oh, I'm going to throw it in this show, do it. And at the end of the show, someone will go, you know, Scott's doing a joke, something like that. Maybe you better leave it out. And so that'll happen. And I get it. So, you know, I'll ask him now sometimes, are you doing a joke about that in the news? Did you see that? Did you doing a joke about that? Because I know the big stories like the Tiger Woods is the, you know, anything like that that's a big major story. He's definitely going to try to squeeze into his show somewhere.
All right. Well, do you feel starstruck with meeting these guys? I mean, you said
No, not at all.
No?
No. I've been in this business a long time. I first got into it as a stagehand. I did lights and sound for shows. So when I was 19 years old, I was working with, like, Frank Sinatra, Tom Jones, you know, all major stars. And really have been around it literally my whole adult life since I'm 19. So I don't, they're just people to me, you know. It's not, I'm stage struck by anybody.
Really?
Yeah.
Who have you gotten starstruck by?
I don't know. Well, you know, I'm telling you, when I was 19 and I was working with Frank Sinatra, I thought that was pretty cool.
Absolutely.
You know, and having actually conversed with him a little bit, like not sitting around talking about major policies or anything, but having said, you know, how are you? How was your day today? You know, and I had had conversations with like Jerry Lewis and Tony Orlando, and these were all Vegas acts. At the time, I was living in Florida, and it was a theater that was bringing all these Vegas acts, and I had gotten a job there as a stagehand. And, I did at times get to hang around a little bit backstage and talk to these people. And it was cool, and it just kind of desensitizes you towards that this is anything more than just, you know, people that do what they do.
Right.
And the Ray Romano connection came in because I worked with Ray here in Vegas when he first came out here back in 1990.
Ah.
So I've known him for literally 20 years. So we became just good friends before he became Ray Romano.
Wow.
And we would play golf and hang out. We had a lot in common. We always talked on the phone. And then just things started to happen for him, and we just continuously stayed friends. So, you know, I talk to him probably twice a week now still. And so it's like when you're around someone who wasn't famous and then becomes famous, then it really seems like there's nothing different.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And that was in my connection. That's how I met Brad.
Uh-huh, sure.
Through Ray.
Yeah, I think both those guys are hysterical.
They're very funny guys.
I would love to see Brad Garrett someday, but I don't get to go anywhere unless I'm working.
Well, he's going out now. He started to go out on the road a little bit. So
cool.
Maybe he'll come to wherever you are. But I know we're going to, in March, we're going to Biloxi, Mississippi, and Lake Charles, Louisiana. I guess there's some casinos down there.
Yeah.
And so we're doing two nights down there in March.
Excellent. Well, listen, we made it to our first break here, Rob. So we're gonna take a minute here, folks, tell you some other stuff. And I'll be right back with the guy that drunk dials Ray Romano, Rob Sherwood. Just a minute. All right, folks, Valentine's Day is going to be here sooner than you think. It's the biggest date night of the year. You should spend it at Laughs Comedy Cafe in Tucson. What a great thing they put together. They put together a Valentine's Day date night. All the ladies are going to get a free rose, and they have a special romantic dinner for two, which is either a 20-ounce heart-shaped ribeye for two or two delicious char-broiled chicken breasts, not to mention the sides. And for dessert, nothing less than the chocolate-covered strawberry. Along with that, you're going to have chilled champagne right at your table. The club's going to be decorated up special just for the event. It's going to be a great show. Robert Mack will be headlining along with the special guest performer Gary Hood. And opening the show will be Lori Brownstone. Don't miss it. Make your reservations early. Get your tickets off the web at www.laughstucson.com. Just click on the banner that tells you Valentine's Day is coming soon. All right, back with Rob Sherwood. Listen, the other thing that I saw on your resume was that you started out, you're a drummer.
Yes.
And I'm a drummer, too. I don't know. You're probably better than me. I don't get to play as much as I'd like.
You know, I don't get to play anymore at all. In fact, now I've been playing. I play more piano now. I learned how to play the piano and guitar also in my career. Well, I was a musician, so now I enjoy more playing the piano in my living room than I do. I don't get to. In fact, my son stole my drum set and he started playing the drums. So, and I don't even know where my drums are right now. I think they're at a friend's house of his and. I've lost track, but if I see a drum set anywhere, I'll sit down and try to play. But I'm probably a little rusty.
Are you still a big fan of watching guys play?
I love music. I love music. Music is my first love. I like new music that's out. You know, I'm not one of these guys that's stuck in my youth and needing to listen to things that I listened to when I was 18 and can't change the dial. I like, you know. I like alternative music. I like a lot of new music to that, which is fun about having kids because they turn me on to new music that I might not hear, especially my son, because he's really into stuff like that. And so he's, over the years, since he's probably 16 or 17, he was turning me on to things. And I just, you know, I found all the new bands really, you know, and all my, you know, peers of mine are going, what are you listening to? And but I really do. I do love music. Yeah.
Well, I'm a huge fan of just watching guys play. You know, I like music, but I get honed in on the drum tracks.
Uh huh.
You know, and I thought maybe I was wondering, do you watch drum solos much?
You know, guys don't really do too many drum solos. I'll tell you what, though, I was watching. They had on one of the music high def channels that we get, it's a Palladia, I think it is.
Uh-huh.
They had on a Rush concert.
Oh yeah.
And he did a drum solo, yeah. And I was like, wow. I mean, I sat there and I watched the whole thing because I was kind of like Rush. I wasn't like a huge fan, but enjoyed it. But when he did that drum solo, I was like, this dude is intense. I mean, it was amazing.
Well, I've seen him do his drum solos, and I don't know if it looks to me like he's concentrating really heavy or he's got no passion for it. I mean, but he doesn't really, to me, when I watch him play, I know he's a great technician and he sounds great. I don't get like this feel from him that I get from some guys.
Well, you know, in the last, I don't know how long ago it was, but he has lost his wife and daughter somehow.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just taken, now I'd never saw him before. But I know what you mean. He seems so serious about it.
Exactly.
That it doesn't, it doesn't seem like he's having a good time.
Yeah, it's like he wasn't having any fun. And I know personally that when I'm playing, when I'm having fun, man, I'm really getting into the groove. And I like guys that play real clean, you know.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, best drum solo ever, at least the one I've seen on YouTube. If you get a chance, look up the one from Godsmack. If you put in Godsmack drum battle.
Uh-huh.
They have the two guys, you know, Sully Erna, who's their lead guitar or is their lead singer, their front guy. He's a drummer from age 3, and the dude that's a regular drummer, Shannon Larkin, both play together.
Wow, that would be cool,
dude. It's astounding. I mean, it's just the music itself. They got accompaniment with the guitar and the bass, but they're playing these real hard, heavy riffs. You know?
Wow. And well, you know, it's funny. I've gotten to know Vinnie Paul.
Uh huh.
Because he's friends with Carrot Top.
Ah, okay.
And he bought a house here now, so he's in town a lot. And so he's backstage a lot hanging out, and he's a pretty cool guy.
Dude, you got to look that one up on YouTube, because you know the Larkin guy reminds me of Animal from the Muppets
really?
When he's playing, because he's this little small guy, but his whole body is just bouncing up and down when he's playing. It's really
well.
Cool
I love
to watch.
A big sound in the drums too. I mean, the drummer, you know, it's like the guy from the Goo Goo, not the Goo Goo Dolls, the guy from Foo Fighters.
Uh huh.
You know, now he's playing. He's the lead singer and the guitar player.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, David Grohl said that, you know, if you want to have a great band, you better have a great drummer.
Oh, absolutely.
Because a great drummer will turn a mediocre band into a great band, and a mediocre drummer could take a great band and turn it into a mediocre band.
Sure.
So really, the drummer is really and I'm not just saying this because I'm a former drummer. But I know that it's, you know, it's the driving force behind the musicians.
Well, it's the guy that keeps the time.
Right, you know, which is why I always felt that Ringo was very underrated as a drummer. Because I always said, how could a guy who played drums for one of the greatest bands ever be a bad drummer?
Well, you know what it was? It's because, in my opinion, it's only because Paul McCartney played a lot of the tracks.
He played on some of them, but there was when they were playing live, he was playing them.
Oh, absolutely!
You know,
you're right.
And when they first got started, he was playing them.
Yeah.
And then as when they were getting into that towards the end of their career, when they were all doing kind of stuff on their own.
Yeah.
But still calling it the Beatles. I know McCartney was playing some of that stuff, but I mean, he wasn't a razzle dazzle drummer, but he had a great meter. They said, which is why George Harrison and John Lennon used him on his solo albums.
Right. Well,
you know, he just had a great meter. But, I mean, like, you know, Keith Moon was a wild man. John Bonham was, like, unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, the old guys were just, like, you know, they had that thing about them. And but even now, you know, some of these new bands, when you listen to the drums, you go, yeah, that's cool, man. Whatever they're doing, that sounds great.
Dude, my two favorite guys, well, the new guys, the guy Daniel Adair who plays for Nickelback, that guy can play.
Yeah.
He's really got it. But, you know, you go back to the old guys. Ian Pace for Deep Purple.
He's just
fabulous.
Yeah, yeah, really fast hands.
Oh, and he's one of the few lefties.
Right, right,
That's big. I mean...
Yeah, I was always a big fan of Carl Palmer.
Uh-huh.
And I was also a big fan of Derry Serafin, who was the drummer for Chicago.
Yeah, oh, he's
a
great drummer.
Because he was a real drummer. I mean, he was a jazz musician, and, you know, he really could play.
Yeah.
And I loved both Carl Palmer and Danny Serafin. I thought those were amazing drummers.
No, you're right. They're great drummers. And I have a great appreciation for guys that keep time and just play a very clear, I don't know how to put it. Simple is okay with me. You don't have to
Charlie
be flashy.
Watts. You know, Charlie Watts, one of the simplest drummers ever.
Dude, I know. And somebody was telling me once you could turn on a metronome with him at the beginning of the song. And then just turn it off after about 10 seconds once you get it dialed in. And when you put it on at the end of the song, it's still right on time.
Yeah, yeah, that's what they said about Charlie Watts, just an unbelievable meter.
Yeah, and that's what you got to have.
Yeah.
So your favorite drummer of all time?
Oh, boy, that's tough.
I'm just going to ask, see if you can put it out there.
Thinking back to my youth, I would probably have to go with Derry Serafin, the guy from Chicago. I loved him.
Really?
Yeah, I just loved, and I loved, when I played, I used to play a lot of, you know, because I would put the headsets on and put their music on and play along with it, but that jazz rock drum thing, I fell in love with it.
Yeah, boy, that's a great band. It's just too bad they didn't get to go past, what's his name when he shot himself?
Yeah, Terry Kath.
Thank you. That
right.
was an awful
Yeah, no,
thing.
And they stayed good, but they just, that kind of, it did, it kind of, and then they got into kind of syrupy stuff with the Peter Cetera vocals, and then, of course, then they just disbanded, and there's still a Chicago out there touring.
Yeah.
With the keyboard player Robert Lamb and the three horn players.
Right.
But that's it. Now they got a new bass player, they got a new guitar player, they got a new drummer.
Yeah.
But I guess if you keep one guy in the band, you can still be the band. If you saw the Super Bowl, you don't need the whole band anymore.
No, and I didn't get to see the Super Bowl because I've given up television for a while.
Okay.
But I'll tell you this, when it comes to that touring under the same name, there was like a Monsters of Rock tour a couple of years ago, and I'm not talking big Monsters of Rock. I'm talking Uriah Heep, Rare Earth, you know, stuff like guys like that.
Right.
And I think the only people left in the band were the roadies. You know, I mean, anybody, it seems like anybody can buy the name.
Right.
And go out and tour anymore.
And they can. I don't know how that works. I don't know what the percentage is of a band member that needs to still be in the band. But I know here in Vegas, you know, you see it like they'll see the Temptations and you go, they're all dead. There can't be, they're not, there isn't a temp in there. You know? And,
they are all temps, actually,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and the Beach Boys are down to, there's not even original, there's not even a Wilson brother playing with them anymore.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Well, both Dennis and Carl are dead.
Yeah.
And Brian doesn't really play with them, so you have like Al Jardine and Mike Love. And I think those two are even fighting with each other now.
Oh, good
so
goodness.
I think there may be like two different Beach Boys out there. You know, it's like, it's weird. I think that this comes a point where you just got to go, you know, it's over.
Give it up.
Just give it up. You're done. You know, I always gave the Beatles that credit that they never tried to get back together without John Lennon. You know, because it wouldn't have worked. Just like, you know, even with the Stones now, without Bill Wyman, it's not the same for me. You know, I always thought that, you know, Ronnie Wood kind of filled that. There was that one guitar player that they kept, you know, Brian Jones, and then
yeah.
And then the next guy, and who was Mick Taylor, and then they got Ronnie Wood, and I thought, okay, you got him for a long time now, and the new guy, I thought, you know, you can't get rid of Bill Wyman and keep replacing him. It's ridiculous, you know. It's just ridiculous.
Well, but, you know, the motivating factor with a lot of these guys becomes money.
Oh, absolutely. And they, you would think they have enough, but it is the motivating factor. They just don't want to give it up. And have you seen the Martin Scorsese movie about the Rolling Stones?
No, I'd like to see it, though. I haven't had a chance.
It's great. But you watch Mick Jagger and you go, this guy is amazing. I mean, he's 67 or 68 years old, and I got my wife in the background.
Yeah, is she calling for you?
Yeah, she's calling for me. She doesn't know I'm doing an interview.
Oh, sorry about
that. She just came home.
Well, you can answer if you want. I mean, this is a very low-key show.
All right, you're good. Hold on. What? I'm doing a radio interview, and now you're on the radio. What? You're going after Julia? Okay. She's going to pick up one of my children.
Ah, nice. And how many kids do you have?
We have four.
Oh, my goodness. Are they a big difference in age, or are they all packed together?
No, they're 10 to 25.
Good grief.
So, you know, that's good family planning.
Well, you know what? That just makes sure you stay at all the school functions
over the longest possible period.
You,
Vilmos, my youngest, who is 10, will be graduating from the elementary school that my son went to. So I have now put 20 years into one elementary school. They should name a wing after me.
Well, here's the thing. And so elementary school, you mean eighth grade?
No, fifth grade.
See, I love this. And I'm glad you brought this up. Not that this is a big thing for me. But why do we have to have some big event for everything? When I was a kid, I'm sure I'm older than you, I bet. I'm 52. You graduated from high school. That was it. There were no ceremonies before that.
Elementary school, they didn't have a ceremony for you?
Of course not.
Oh, I did, and we're pretty close to the same age.
Had ceremonies?
We had a little ceremony when I left the sixth grade in elementary school. Yeah. Yeah,
really?
They had a little something for us. Yeah, I remember it.
I got nothing, and nobody I knew had
school
nothing. Yeah, back in Illinois.
Okay, yeah, because I grew up in New York, and yeah, they had a little thing when you left the sixth grade. And then it wasn't anything till high school.
Well, with no disrespect intended to your family or children or anything else, but what's the point?
Well, I don't know either, to be honest with you. Now, when my daughter graduated junior high school here,
yeah,
I don't think they had anything.
Yeah.
They may have had, I know they had like awards banquets because she was a cheerleader. But they didn't really have a graduation ceremony for junior high school.
Well,
and the elementary school here doesn't really do anything either. They just you know what they did last year? They had everyone kind of line up like on either side of an aisle and
yeah.
Outside in the and the kids would just walk through and everyone would kind of clap as they were leaving their last day of school.
Well, what they need to do is they need to just do it old school. They need to get the meanest teacher that they have And at the end of the year, they should stand at the door going, yeah, I never liked any of you. Get out of here.
That's right.
Lousy kids.
And now my dog's in the interview.
Boy, well, that's all right.
This is great, huh?
Well, you know, there's nothing like dealing with a professional. That's what I've always said.
That's right.
But
my kids are going to come home soon. It's going to get more interesting here as this interview goes along.
But this is the whole thing. I mean, that's what's good about this show. It's a real show. I'm not
This is all real. This is real.
Yeah, and the good news is I'm not going to edit any of this out.
Good.
So
don't.
If you've got anything to say that might cause you problems later on, this would not be a good place to say it.
No, I try to watch what I say because I have a habit of saying things that get me in trouble all the time around here. So I really have to try to learn to watch what I say because things just come out of my mouth and then my brain goes, "Did you just didn't say that, did you?"
Oh, yeah, you have one of those moments. It's
I just, for some reason, I can't get the don't say this factor before I say it. It's always after the fact. It's that hindsight thing.
Well, that's, you know, unfortunate for you, but it might work out in my favor, so I'll just keep hoping.
Okay.
So back to that, you raised all your kids in Vegas?
Yeah, they're all born and raised here.
And I understand Vegas is a great place to raise a family.
It's not bad. The one thing it does do, it just like probably raising kids in any metropolitan area, it kind of jades them to the little things in life that may throw people off if you live in a real rural area.
Yeah.
You know, my wife is originally from Idaho, so we would go up there and visit, probably two or three times a year.
Yeah.
And when the older ones now don't really travel with us much anymore, but, you know, we would go up there and they would watch the news or people would talk about what was going on and what the big deal was, and they were like, really? That's news? You know, like the kids, if they... up there, if you were caught cruising around on Main Street, if the cops saw you going up and down the boulevard there, and it's not even a main, I mean, literally, it's like, you know, little American towns where you got a couple of street lights. And
sure.
If the cops saw you out like at 9 o'clock at night and you were cruising up and down the street, they pull you over and ask you what you're doing. And, you know, and everyone knows each other. You know, you go out, if you go to the hamburger place, you know, everyone's saying hi to one another and everyone knows each other. And my kids always got spooked by that. They're like, this is creepy. Everyone knows each other.
Yeah.
You know, because here no one really, I mean, people know, you know, we know our neighbors and stuff. But, you know, if you go out, you don't, you know, you might see someone you know, but you don't see everyone you know.
Exactly. Well, what do you tell your kids about casinos then? I mean, living in the middle of Sin City, as it were, and all the advertisements.
I tell my kids, I'm going to the sports book. I'll be right back. They know I enjoy the. I like to gamble.
Oh, do you? You're a gambling guy?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I don't play blackjack. The other night, I had a friend of mine was in town that was working at one of the other comedy clubs here, and we went out and played craps.
Yeah.
So I lost $100 playing craps because I like I enjoy. That's a fun game to play.
Yeah, you can go to Circus Circus and do it for quarters.
Yeah, I know, but we were playing a $5 table. But I do like craps, but I really, really, really love sports betting.
Ah.
Because I can root for a team that I could give a crap about.
Uh-huh.
I could see two teams, you know, if I'm not doing anything one night or an afternoon, and which is why I wish they had sports betting on the road. I wish I could bet on the road because I do have a lot of downtime, as you know.
Sure.
And it's fun to pick a team and just root for that team for that night. And and you can't do that. I have a hard time doing it if I don't have money on it.
Sure. Sure. Now, how did you do in the Super Bowl then?
I didn't do well.
You were taking the Colts, huh?
I drank the Kool-Aid like everyone else and thought the Indianapolis Colts were going to win.
Really?
And, yeah, I was listening to all the media hype and thinking how Peyton Manning couldn't lose and the Saints were tight and they should have lost to Minnesota. And I watched it all and I thought, and I really did think that Peyton Manning was going to pull it out because I do think he's that good. But I think they played a little too tight. I think they played a little too conservative. I think that I could probably pick the few places where I think they made big mistakes. As far as their game plan. And I think that New Orleans was very loose and very underdoggy. And I usually love the underdog. And had the Saints been playing any other team that was an underdog other probably than Peyton Manning, I probably would have went with the Saints because I usually go for the underdog. I love underdog betting.
Sure. Well.
But there was something about Peyton Manning and the way they played this year. The only games they lost were games that they chose to lose. The two games that they lost, they didn't play anybody. And then when they needed to win, they did. And I just thought, you know what? They took the Jets, who looked like they were the Cinderella team, and just made them look horrible after they had beaten, two relatively good teams all season. And the Chargers were a really good team. So the fact that the Jets beat them, I thought, wow, this team, maybe this is the team. And then when the Colts did what they did to the Jets, I thought, no, the Colts are too good. They're just too good. But, you know, you never know, and it turned out the way it did, and I wasn't happy about it. But I was watching it with a comic named Danny Bevins.
Sure.
Who?
Hobnobs, what is it, Iowa or something?
Yeah, but he called the interception before it happened.
Ah.
I mean, as he was throwing the ball, he said, this would be a great time for an interception. And he intercepted it, and he was rooting for the Saints. So he was very happy, but the rest of us in the room, not so happy.
Well, see, here's the problem. The factor, you talk about the game and everything, and you just forgot to talk about the Cardassian big ass. That's probably what fueled the entire win for
the
Saints.
Well, you know, out here you could bet the over-under on how many times they would show her on camera. Oh, they had all sorts of bets like that. They had how many windmills Pete Townsend was going to do. The over-under was 6.
Really?
Yeah, and I think he did 6 in one song.
Oh,
yeah, he went way over. Yeah, the prop bets are the fun bets because you get about 14 pages of prop bets that you could make.
Well,
for people that are listening that don't know what a prop is, it's called a proposition bet. And it is things like how many points are going to be scored, who's going to score first, how many field goals, how many penalties, who's going to win the coin toss. Is it going to go into overtime?
Wow.
All sorts, hundreds and hundreds of them. And those are the fun. You make a bunch of those, and then you got tickets all over the floor, and you just watch the game and see when you're going to win.
Well, I'll tell you what. If I would have been on the Saints, I would have been working my ass off just to make sure that poor bastard had to propose. That would have been my primary motivation. Forget the Super Bowl. I just want to watch the guy suffer.
Oh, you're mean-spirited, but I like that.
That's my way of living. Hey, we've made our second break, folks. We'll be right back with Degenerate Gambler and Carrot Top's Dildo Dealer, Rob Sherwood.
Oh, no.
In just a minute. Are you looking for high-speed internet service? Are you looking for personal service? Try Colorado High-Speed Internet Services. Great people to deal with. They service over 15 states throughout the Southwest. They're a great company to deal with, very reliable, and the personal touch. Reach them through their website, www.cohsi.net. Or you can contact them by phone, 719-404-3311. All right, back with Rob Sherwood. You're in a home stretch, buddy.
All right, I'm good.
Almost
I'm good.
Made it
I'm starting to feel I'm getting my win now. I'm ready to go.
Well, listen, one of the last things I like to devote the final segment of the show to are road stories. In your case, Vegas stories would be just as good. You know the kind of story I'm talking about where, you know, it really was a tragedy, but that ended up we could laugh about it later?
Yeah, you know, it's going to sound weird. I haven't had too many horrible stories in this business.
Really?
I
mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, I'm trying to think. I mean, you know, I've had strange things happen. We had a doing a show one time here, and to pull a gag on a guy, the guy who was the stage manager gave all of us and told us that this was happening, gave all of us envelopes with a $100 bill in them.
Right.
And he gave one of the guys an envelope with a $10 bill in it. And he just gave us all the envelopes and said, hey, someone really liked the show and he wanted to tip you guys. And so we all opened our envelopes to find the $100 bill, and the other guy opened up his and found a $10 bill. And was like, what the? And we're like, well, I guess you suck. And to see the look on his face while that happened was fun. But, you know, I mean, like you know, I mean, the worst part of gigs that I have is the downtime.
Yeah.
And the condos you got to stay in.
Yes.
And, you know, some of them look like someone was killed in them.
Yeah, they still got the chalk outline in the living room.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's usually the worst part. And, of course, traveling is usually, you know, I mean, I've been stuck in airports for 14 and 15 hours. You know, that kind of stuff. But the show part of it usually, believe it or not, is usually the best part of my day.
Well, that's the best part of any guy's day that does comedy.
You know, that's
stage
it.
Time.
I mean, you know, I haven't had a really ton of horror stories as far as the business goes. It's always traveling or, you know, driving in an ice storm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, maybe working with a guy you're not that crazy about. You know, that'll happen from time to time. But even then, I would say, you know, 90% of the times working with people, I usually, if I don't generally really like the guy, I like him enough that I can tolerate him.
Right. I've spent many a week in the condo in my room.
Yeah.
You know, out of necessity.
Right.
Because the guy's working with was a psycho.
Yeah.
Right.
I've run across a few of them where I just couldn't. And usually, you know, we'll start talking like politics or something, and you know, if you realize you guys aren't on the same page, it can be a long week, because you're not going to change anyone's mind. I've learned that. If I've learned nothing in life, you can't change anyone's mind on religion or politics.
No.
You know, so if they're not on the same page with you, then really we're just going to argue, and I can do that if you want, but. It gets a little exhausting after a while.
So when you come into the condo and you see Fox News and O'Reilly's on,
then I'm done. I'm loading up the pipe.
You're looking for a crack dealer local.
That's right. This is going to be a long 4 days.
Well, you know, that is one of the nice things about the business is kind of evolving a little bit, and we're kind of getting away from the condo.
Well,
don't you think?
We are, yeah. Although I have worked in recently, I worked a club that still had it. It was nice. It was clean. You know, it was two bedrooms. Everyone had their own little accommodation, so it wasn't bad. And the guy I worked with was nice. We never met before, and we kind of got along. We didn't, you know, he kind of went his own way a little bit, and that was okay. But yeah, I would much rather just be in my own hotel room. You know, to be all honest with you, when I first started doing this, and I started staying at condos, I was like, this is not for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't like it at all because it's weird. I grew up an only child, and so having kids is what taught me in life to share.
Yeah.
And I'd never had to hide food. You know, now if I bring home something and it's in a to-go box, there's no guarantee it's going to be there when I want it. You know, I could write, do not touch, leave this alone, I'll kill you if you eat this, but they still do.
I have three kids, so I understand this very well.
Yeah, you know, and so it was like, now it's, I got to hide things, I got to bury it behind the milk, you can't see it.
Uh-huh.
So when I ended up, you know, having to live with another person that I don't know,
yeah,
that it was a little uncomfortable at first. And then I just kind of got used to it. You know, you just kind of go, all right. And then you realize the other guy's probably feeling pretty much the same way you're feeling. And, of course, we all do the same thing, you know, as far as what we do in life, you know, being a comic. And so we all kind of have there's something a little wrong with all of us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, once you start realizing that, I kind of got used to it kind of quick, but it was weird at first, you know, just, and people say that to me. It's so weird. Even when I was working a couple of weeks ago, talking to some people after the show, and I was talking to, me and the other comic were sitting there, and they go, where do you guys stay? And I go, well, we stay in a condo. And they go, together? And we're like, well, yeah. And they go, did you know each other before this? And we go, no. And they go, and you could see the look on their face like, oh, my God, two people living together who don't even know each other, and they're going to stay there for, like, 4 days together?
Yeah.
And you go, yeah, you know, it's just kind of... Well,
yeah, but after you've been in the business for a while, you understand the rules of the condo. And really, the times that you have the worst trouble is when the guy brings his chick or
right.
his friend.
Right.
That doesn't know what the deal is.
Right. Too many people and, yeah, too many unwanted faces in the condo.
Exactly. There's nothing worse... Then when the guy shows up and goes, hey, man, I thought I'd bring my chick this week.
Yeah. Well, she's going to be cooking for me, too.
Oh, God. You know what? And I'm not anti-woman, but, man, I've had some – these. They bring these girls in, and it's just all of a sudden the whole place is turned upside down.
Yeah, I don't like that either. And then the other one that's bad is when the condo has the MC sleeping on the couch.
Yeah, you got to feel bad for that guy.
I feel bad for that guy, yeah. You know, but I also feel for me because now I can't sit on the couch.
Right, you can't sit on the couch, you can't watch TV, you can't come in late at night, you can't go out early.
Right, you know, and...
Or he's watching you. Have you had one of those guys? The ones where they kind of track you the whole time?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you the other thing is the guy that wants to talk about material or... Or he's throwing bits at you, or you know, I'm like, dude, really, I'm done. I don't want to hear this.
You mean always on guy?
Oh, the always on guy. That's the guy that I would just assume kill than spend the week with. And I'll take my chances with a jury because that will make you nuts when you know he's doing bits. Everything is a bit. Everything is a bit. And for people who are listening and don't really know what that's about, comics will. Try like they always think they have to be on. They're always performing. They're always trying to be funny, and you can as if you're a comic, you can tell that that's what it is.
Right.
And you just it just gets so annoying. It's like, can we just have a normal conversation without doing this? And they can't. Some guys just can't. It's just like, man, when is your quarter going to run out?
Exactly. And to put it in layman's terms. The guy that's always on is this, to us is the same as the guy you meet that's done everything that knows everything.
Right. Well, those people are great too, aren't they?
Oh, it's the same thing though.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, it really is. And I spent a week with a guy on a road trip driving him around that was both. He was not only always on guy, he was I've done everything guy.
Well, that's the other one. It's not the condo bit, but having to travel with someone in a car.
Oh, that's
I got a gig last summer in Wisconsin in Milwaukee.
Yeah,
and we had to go from the gig was a Thursday. It was a Wednesday, Thursday. You were off Friday and a Saturday, but Wednesday and Thursday were up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Yeah, the UP.
Yeah, so you had to drive all the way up there, and I never met this guy, and he picked me up in this car. And it was a 7-8 hour drive up to the UP. Luckily for me, he turned out to be a nice guy.
Yeah.
And like we just kind of talked, and you know, it was cool. But you get in a car with someone you don't know, or you get hooked up, and someone says, "Yeah, well, you're going to be working with this guy. He lives in your area. You guys can drive together." And he gets in the car, and like you said, it's a guy that knows it all, or just doesn't stop. And you go, the first time you take a piss, I'm leaving you there. You're going to have to find your own way after that.
I think I'd had enough with this particular guy when I had mentioned, and this is how long ago it was like the early 90s, and I was listening to the radio, heard Huey Lewis in the news. He goes, yeah, I know Huey Lewis. I played the harmonica with him on stage and blah, 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 blah. And I'm, all right, that's it. I'm done.
Yeah, that's it. Your story, your BS is now wearing itself thin.
I can't stand it.
The guy that can't, that always tops your story.
Well, then I don't have a story. I don't really have a story.
Right.
You know, I shouldn't even be a comic because I didn't have really bad stuff happen to me when I was growing up. You know, I'm just insecure. That's my only badge of honor to be a comic.
Right. Well, I think that's the common thread that runs through most comics.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing like when you're on stage and there's you know, if there's 200 people laughing and there's the one guy just staring at you without a grin on his face, that's the guy you're looking at. You know, that's the weird insecurity about what we do is why isn't that guy laughing? Never mind the other 199 people are laughing their asses off. This guy isn't laughing. What's wrong with him?
Exactly.
And I can't figure out what that's about. I can't even understand why that guy's bothering me now. Because he's the one, no matter, and I don't care how well I'm doing, I'm going to eventually say something to him.
Oh, is that right? You're like that?
I may go, are you okay? You know, I won't be mean because I do like to talk to the audience. I do that quite a bit in my act. I set up a lot of material by kind of asking rhetorical questions and I do like to riff with the crowd. If the crowd is a little spunky, I can flow with that really well. And I do like talking to the crowd. So I will in a nice way ask someone, you know, but it turns out a lot of times that's just the way people are. They don't. There are people in the world that just don't laugh out loud. The weirdest thing is I've had shows that I thought were like mediocre shows and have the audience come up to you afterwards and tell you what a great time they had.
Right.
And you go, really? And they go, yeah. And you don't want to say anything like, well, then what was that about? But, that's one thing that I've never understood, that you can't really judge how people are liking you by how they're laughing. You know, because some people just don't have that big, boisterous laugh, or they kind of, internalize it, and they just kind of laugh, but they don't, and then afterwards they'll tell you what a great time they had.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a laugher, but, I sit in the back, so no one can tell.
Right. Well, after doing this for so long, it takes a lot to get me to laugh.
Yeah, usually it's the bombing that makes me laugh.
Yeah, that'll make me laugh, and then there's a few comics that will make me laugh.
Sure. Well,
but it's pretty. In fact, I was working here in town, and I was watching a guy last week, and I don't like mentioning names, but I would. But he may listen to this. well, if he listens to it, he's going to know I'm probably talking about him now anyway. So, but I was sitting there, and I was just kind of watching him, and the girl that worked at the club was like really laughing at him,
uh-huh.
And I was just kind of sitting there and just staring into space,
uh-huh.
And she kind of looks over at me, and she goes, why don't you ever laugh? I go, what? She goes, you're never laughing. You're never laughing at this. And I go, I know. Why? Why are you asking me? Why am I supposed to be laughing at this? And she just kind of looked at me like she thought there was something wrong with me because I didn't think he was funny. And I didn't want to say that because I could tell she did. And you don't want to insult someone that way by saying,
right.
Well, I think that And a nice enough guy, I suppose, but just didn't make me laugh.
Sure.
And it had nothing to do with him. I just didn't think he it's that funny. And of course, I've been in the business a long time and watched a lot of it, so it does take a lot to get you to laugh.
Sure. That's exactly right.
Even movies, I don't, certain things make me laugh. I don't. Have you watched Ray's new show at all, Men of a Certain? Oh, you say you're not watching TV.
Well, I had TV when he started out, and to be honest with you, I got turned off by the commercials. I'm not going to lie to you.
No, he's got a new show out now. How long have you been off TV?
Yeah, Men of a Certain Age. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you've just been off TV like a few months?
A few months, and I watched, the commercials didn't do anything for me, and then I watched the first part of the first show, and I just couldn't get any traction with it, and it's really supposed to be geared towards me.
Yeah, it's very good. You would really like it. You got to give it a chance, but you got to TiVo it and then fast forward through the commercials.
Well, I God bless Hulu, because I can watch just about anything I want on Hulu. So I haven't given up TV completely. I'm still watching some of my favorite shows.
You're not watching your commercial TV.
I'm not watching commercial TV. I'm not watching TV as much as I used to anyway.
Well, there really is a lot of bad TV on.
There is,
and there's also a lot of TV on. I enjoy, I'll get into, some of these Discovery Channel things and just educational stuff just because it's interesting. It's interesting to learn something that maybe I didn't know or to remind me of something I once knew, and I go, oh, I think I used to know that. But with all the other crap on with some of these channels, with all the reality things, and people are becoming, famous just because, and there's nothing to back it up. It's like, that show Jersey Shore, these people are becoming famous for being stupid.
Well,
which is like, really, is stupid now a badge of honor? Because, if it is, they've got a new leader in Sarah Palin.
Well, all right, we're going to end on that note.
Oh, really?
That's good enough. Yep, that's it. You're
okay.
Done. But, folks, I'm not done with you yet. Listen. Go see Rob. He's going to be great. He's appearing with the great Patrick DeGear.
No, I don't know Patrick. You know Patrick?
Yes, I do. You're going to have a great time.
Oh,
Patrick's
good.
A great guy, a very good comedian. You two are going to have a lot of fun together. They're both going to be at Laughs February 12th and 13th. There's two shows. That's Friday and Saturday night. Two shows each night. Friday is at 8 and 10:30. Saturday is at 7 and 9:30. You can get your tickets on the web still at www.laughstucson.com. If you're old-fashioned, you can pick up the phone and call them. And it's 520-323-8669. So, also, don't forget to look up Rob on the internet. You can get him at robsherwood.biz. That's robsherwood. just like it sounds, .biz. He's got a nice little site there that you can find out all kinds of stuff. And I guess now I'm going to have to watch Ray Romano's show just out of respect.
That's right.
So, listen, folks, thanks for listening to the show. Make sure you go out and see Rob. And like I always tell you, watch your comedy live. That's the way you're supposed to do it. If you can't make it to laughs this weekend, go to a comedy club near you. Thanks for listening.